Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025, 1063. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. So Vrabel and Tannehill talk today. It's always good. See, this is the tough part. People don't understand this, but I probably wake up around like 7 o'clock, and I'm like, all right, what are we going to talk about today? 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And so those Wednesday press conferences are always the hardest because Vrabel will talk two more times before the Bills game, maybe one more time before the Bills game, but it doesn't, like, he doesn't say anything anymore. He's already gotten out everything he needs to say about Buffalo on Wednesday. And then Tannehill talks, so here's the starting quarterback.
Right.
So it's like, I want to, you know, decide at 7 a.m. what we're going to talk about at 2 o'clock. You can't do it because you don't know what they're going to say. And that leads us to what they did say today. And in this case, what they didn't say. So as we know, Todd Downing is the most criticized guy around town. One thing TD did bring up that I actually didn't even notice or hear was that the good plays are people giving Tim Kelly credit for the good plays and they're giving Downing credit for the bad plays or blame for the bad plays.
I haven't heard that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
That is a hot take. If that is, in fact, what is happening, and it wouldn't surprise me if it is.
But it just plays into the fact that the Titans fans pick one person to just hate no matter what. And if they were giving credit for the good plays to Tim Kelly, then that would totally check.
And it's weird because you said, like, is that a Titans fans thing? And I was, like, thinking it was an every fans thing. But then I don't think there's a guy on the Predators who the Predators fans, you know, single out and just hate. Like,
no.
They did. I mean, when they had guys that were just, like, awful, like Turris, Ben Harper, they don't single those guys out. So I was a little surprised by that. But that's the digression of this, which is they were both asked about the predictability of the offense. Well, we can all agree that when you ask Ryan Tannehill about the predictability of the offense, you're asking about the coordinator, right?
Well, the predictability of the offense would be the offensive play calls, and that predictability.
And when you
ask calls the plays, the offensive coordinator.
And when you ask the coach about it, isn't it kind of like, I'd like to speak to the manager.
It's like, hey, Mike, are you going to get him in trouble?
Like, Mike, are you watching this?
Yeah.
Okay. I was surprised by what I didn't hear. This was Tannehill when he was asked about the predictability of running the ball a lot on first down on Sunday.
Is it as much as you guys did on first down became predictable for the Giants?
I don't know. You have to ask the Giants.
Okay. So what he didn't say was what? Hey, you know, I thought our game plan was great. We just have to execute it better. I thought Todd did a great job.
We believe in Todd. He's a great coach.
I thought our game plan was excellent on Sunday. We just have to execute it out there better.
And that's on me.
And Tannehill instead goes, hey.
Ask the Giants about that.
You have to ask the Giants.
Which is so funny.
And that he gave the Tannehill chuckle, and he deserved that chuckle.
That was a good one.
That was a great deflection. Derek Jeter would be proud. Belichick would be proud. That is the way. This is for anybody out there. If somebody asks you about something that you don't want to talk about and they involve somebody else in it, you say
that
you have to ask them. That is perfect.
The players always, you have to ask Vrabel about that.
The second thing is Vrabel. So Vrabel was asked about the predictability. So we know that Tannehill didn't go out of his way to defend Downing. Now, he didn't throw Downing under the bus, but he didn't go out of his way to defend him. Vrabel was asked the same question. Here's what Vrabel said.
I guess the number of first down runs for Derek, I mean, a lot of people are saying too predictable. But on the other hand, is it only too predictable if you don't gain enough yardage, if they don't succeed?
That's pretty much your job and my job. That's what it go. That's what happens around, you know, the second guessing. I mean, we've had a lot of successful, you know, first down runs. We want to have a lot of successful first down runs and passes on Monday. And so, you know, that's the battle that everybody wages. You know, especially, you know, our focus is on Buffalo and going up there and making sure that we have a plan that whatever we do on first down, the players understand, that they believe in, and that they have an opportunity to execute it.
Okay, that I got to unpack, the whole thing, because there's a lot of Vrabelese in there.
A lot of Vrabelese.
But there was no defensive Downing in there. In fact, if anything else, I thought there was a criticism, which was, when John Glennon asked the question, and I don't even remember exactly what John Glennon asked, even though we just played it, but it was something along the lines of being predictable on first down, right?
Yes.
Which is probably how Vrabel interpreted the question, as John Glennon is, you know, kind of asking it, trying to be respectful. Vrabel probably interpreted it as, is the play calling a problem? And Vrabel just goes, you know, that's your job and my job. And I think that the note that I got from that was, hey, it's your job to criticize because you all are the criticizers. It's my job to criticize because I'm the one in charge. I'm the one who decides if he's doing a good job. I'm the teacher who grades the paper. And then he talked, and then he clearly transitioned himself into, so what we got to do for Buffalo, 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 let's not worry about the last game. Let's talk about the next game. Buffalo, Buffalo, Buffalo. Again, he didn't go out of his way at all to defend Todd Downing. Tannehill didn't go out of his way at all to defend Todd Downing. Should we read something into that?
I don't know. Because even when there is someone to blame, Vrabel will defend them. It's the same with Tannehill, for example, after the playoff game. Vrabel defended him vehemently.
Did he, though?
Yeah.
No, remember what he kept saying? Excellent toughness. Elite toughness.
Yeah.
But he never gave him credit for
anything.
And he
did say that, you know, we got to be great around Tannehill.
He never said anything about, like, the good things about playing quarterback.
Well, that's what's good about him. He's very tough.
Right. That's like she has a nice personality.
But he didn't say anything about Downing. He didn't say, oh, good guy, good coach, happy to have him on the team. He didn't say anything. He didn't even mention Downing's name.
That's my point. They didn't go out of there. They were not asked about Downing.
No.
Had Vrabel been asked directly about Downing, he would have had to defend Downing.
He's a great coach.
You know, we believe in him. I see what he does every day. You don't see it. You don't know. Mm-hmm. Even if he doesn't believe that, he would have had to say it because at that point, now he has to defend his guy. It's like when a baseball player is clearly, you know, the ball's clearly down the middle and they call the guy out on strike three and the guy starts to argue. The manager has to come out and argue on behalf of the player, even though the player was wrong and the umpire was right, because the manager has to defend the player. Mm-hmm. So the head coach, unless he's going to fire Todd Downing tomorrow, the head coach has to come out and defend Todd Downing. There's no way around it if he's asked directly about Downing.
But he wasn't asked directly.
He wasn't.
Neither was Tannehill.
So they don't have to answer directly about Downing. And they chose to not answer about Downing.
Then how much can we really read into it then if they weren't asked directly about Downing?
That's my point.
They didn't bring him into it.
They're not going out of their way. That's my point. It's like if you really, truly cared about somebody or you really, truly believed in somebody, you would go out of your way to make sure that everybody knew how you felt. Let's just use this show today.
Okay.
Didi and I got into it for a brief second in the 3 o'clock hour. And what did we both say at the end of the 3 o'clock hour?
Love you. Sorry. How much we respect
each other. How much we, like, right. Because it's like we wanted to go out of our way to make sure that everybody knew that, like, hey, even though there was a little dust up, like, we both respect each other. And I'm not saying that Tannehill and Vrabel, it's tough because this is the problem with these guys that don't ever say anything.
With Tannehill, though, it's a little bit more obvious than Vrabel. Tannehill, it was, get asked the Giants. I don't want to talk about that at all. Oh, I don't want to touch that topic.
But the true feelings about it, I think, are more obvious with Vrabel than it is with Tannehill.
Can we hear that again?
The Vrabel one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess the number of first down runs for Derek, I mean, a lot of people are saying too predictable. But on the other hand, is it only too predictable if you don't gain enough yardage, if they don't succeed?
That's pretty much your job and my job. That's what happens around, you know, the second guessing. I mean, we've had a lot of successful, you know, first down runs. We want to have a lot of successful first down runs and passes on Monday. And so, you know, that's That's the battle that everybody wages, you know, especially, you know, our focus is on Buffalo and going up there and making sure that we have a plan that whatever we do on first down, the players understand, that they believe in, and that they have an opportunity to execute it.
First of all, Vrabel got his feelings there because he quivered there a little bit.
He kind of cut John Glennon off. Hey, that's your job and my job.
Well, he cuts everybody off when he feels like somebody's dancing
going
around
one
something
way,
and then he just kind of like cuts them off. But the bigger thing for me was this is the one thing that I couldn't tell by that, is was the that's your job and my job, was that a crack at Downing. Like, the you guys are criticizing him, and I'm criticizing him too. Because that's my – your guys' opinions don't matter, but my opinion matters, and I'm the one – I'm the real criticizer.
I don't know what he meant by that.
Or was it like, you all just want to criticize and second guess. I'm the one who actually has to do it for real. But you guys get to play make-believe and bullcrap around, and that's – and it could be that. But again, they didn't go out of their way to defend Todd.
I do like how he put in there that we want to have a lot of successful first down runs and passes. Like, hey, we're going to have to throw the ball on first down at some point.
I just, again, when asked indirectly about Downing.
They didn't bring him up.
They didn't defend him. If they were asked directly about him, they would. But they didn't. I mean, Bill Lazier, whatever he is, I think he's like the offensive coordinator somewhere now. He was Tannehill's offensive coordinator in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like Tannehill when they played the Bears and he was coaching there, Tannehill was asked about, oh yeah, great guy, learned a lot from him, really appreciate it, whatever. And so I thought that maybe he could be a fit for offensive coordinator when Arthur left and Joe was like, dude, he hates him. And I was like, really? Joe was like, oh yeah, Tannehill hates that guy. I was like, seriously? Joe was like, just go read any article from Miami at that time. I'm like, I guess all I'm going off of is when they played him. He said he loved him. So I don't know. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Plus, an interesting email I got about Downing that I do want to share, and we'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 the game.
Play like you played against the Giants, but add just a little bit more. Okay, that's all we need for you to do. If you do that, I'm trusting that the defense that we saw last week won't be the defense we see this week. That's what I'm trusting.
Well, you take the defense of the first half you saw last week.
Exactly. If I see the defense I saw in the first half, this would be a much closer game. But if he reverts back to the second half where they were undisciplined, then this is going to be a blowout. But Ryan Tannehill can't afford to lose this game for the Titans. He has to stay within himself and not try to do too much just because it's the Buffalo Bills and you figure, man, last week it was a disaster in the second half. I need to do something as a quarterback. No, play your game. Don't do more than what you can.
There you go. That was D-Mace on Tannehill. I would agree, except I'm not sure that doing your best may not be enough against the Buffalo Bills. But going back to Vrabel and Tannehill not going out of their way to defend Downing. Now, they didn't throw him under the bus. But just when asked about the play calling, didn't bring up their faith in the play caller or the – boy, what a great
didn't defend
answer.
The play caller.
Can we get that Giants one again? This is bravo Ryan Tannehill. I thought he was good on Sunday. I thought this may be better than any throw he made Sunday. Although Tannehill does not get enough credit for two throws that he made on Sunday. The one to Phillips on the sidelines.
That was a nice one.
The one to Hilliard for where he threw it over the linebacker's head.
Mm-hmm.
And Hilliard just jumped up and caught it for a touchdown. That was a beautiful throw.
I thought the one to Hollister was pretty solid too.
That was a good throw too and a good catch by Hollister.
Good catch.
But
nice little toe tap.
This was just absolutely fantastic by Ryan Tannehill.
I think as much as you guys did on first down became predictable for the Giants?
I don't know. You have to ask the Giants.
And so, just
good job, Ryan.
Fantastic.
Giggles, Tannehill.
So somebody sent me an email, and they said this in reference to the Buffalo game. And they said, let's talk about Todd Downing in Buffalo. Against the world champions and the offensive guru Sean McVay on the road, Buffalo held the Rams to 243 yards and collected 3 interceptions and 7 sacks. So is everybody going to call Sean McVay a bum or that he sucks as a play caller or coordinator after the Bills did to him what they did? How will people feel about Downing if the same thing happens? You and I both know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'll be a massacre as far as the text line is concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Or the phones are concerned with Todd Downing.
Oh, yeah.
If the Titans go out there and put up the same performance the Rams did. But here's what's crazy. But the Rams have better players.
But also, when it comes to frustration from the fan base, this isn't something new with Todd Downing. This isn't something that just all of a sudden, after one game, the fans are irate at Todd Downing for predictable play calling or just confusing play calling. The Rams at least have a Super Bowl to show for it. Sean McVay at least has a large enough sample size of being a really good offensive play caller and a really good offensive mind that one bad game doesn't make him a bozo.
It was crazy.
This isn't a one game sample size of Todd Downing.
It was crazy.
What?
I have always thought this, and so maybe this is just like me wanting my opinion to be right more than it is a reflection of reality. Like I'm projecting my bias onto this. I've always kind of thought McVay was a little overrated as this offensive innovator. And the reason I say that is, first of all, they've got awesome players.
Yeah.
You know, now he changed everything when he showed up. But that's not hard to do. They had Jeff Fisher. So they take Jeff Fisher, the dinosaur of all dinosaurs, the all-time losingest coach in the history of the NFL, and they replace him with, you know, Sean McVay. It's not like Mike Mularkey was a good coach. And then Mike Vrabel came in, and he's also a good coach. It was Jeff Fisher, dinosaur, especially on offense, was never good even in his heyday as an offensive coach, replaced by Sean McVay. And I'm not saying McVay's a bad play caller or anything like that. And I certainly don't think he's the bum that Matt LaFleur is. But
he's a top five coach in the NFL.
But at the same time, everybody just wets their pants over Sean McVay every time. It's like, oh, Sean McVay is incredible. It's so innovative. It's outstanding. It's this, it's that. And I'm like, when they played the Titans last year, Chris Collinsworth in the second half on the Sunday night broadcast was like, it took the Rams long enough to realize they had to move the protection around a little bit. Or that Super Bowl where Belichick just totally foxed.
Worked him.
Just worked him. And it's like, is he really that good?
Well, to your point, you know, Shanahan doesn't get the same amount of love as Sean McVay.
That's because Shanahan's blown two Super Bowls.
Well, before this past year, Sean McVay hadn't won any Super Bowls, and people were taking their pants off for him.
That is true.
People continue to take their pants off for him, especially since he won a Super Bowl. But I also think it's the whole pomp and circumstance of him on TV or on radio hits when they're like, okay, in 2018, when you were at, you know, 3rd and 7 against the Bears, you know, what was the play call? What was the situation? And he's able to, like, reel it off almost like a savant.
Do you know what's amazing? That doesn't impress me.
But I think a lot of people get impressed by it.
Does it impress you?
I think it's pretty cool.
But
I think that's what gets people. It's beyond just him being a good coach, which I think he is. Mm-hmm. It's people thinking that he is some sort of football savant.
Right, like that
he can recall
the
all these
details. The
fresh
blood of the game that is taking the game to a new frontier.
Yes, like he is no longer old man football coach, that he is this young, fresh, very smart mind.
And I'm not saying he's not. Like,
and I think he's a good coach, and he's a smart offensive coach.
But like, they won that Super Bowl because the Rams' defensive line dominated the terrible Bengals' offensive line. If I had to boil it down to like the one reason that game was won, it was the Rams' defensive line dominated the Bengals' offensive line.
And I don't think that the Rams were the best team in the NFL last year.
No.
I don't think they were the best team in the NFC last year.
No.
It was just, sometimes it's just the perfect storm.
That's how football works.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get lucky. In order to win the Super Bowl, you have to get – the Titans were 1 yard away from winning the Super Bowl. And in that 1 yard away kind of thing, they had about 8 things go their way, one of which was the Music City Miracle, which went their way. I mean, they could have reviewed that and said it was a forward pass. It wasn't, but they could have reviewed it and said that. You know, they played Jacksonville. They fumbled the ball in scoring distance. And on the next play, Josh Evans sacks Mark Brunell for a safety. And the play after that, Derek Mason returns a free kick for a touchdown. It's like they were driving to score a touchdown, and instead they walked away with 9 points instead of 7. You know, it's crazy, those little things that have to happen. But the luck you have to have injury-wise and everything else. I think McVay is a good coach. I don't think he's as great as everybody makes him out to be. Like I almost sometimes kind of take offense to that. But I will say, to the point of that email, if Downing does what McVay did against the Bills, Downing is going, it's going to be ugly.
But it's different.
Is it?
You're starting from two different places. McVay just won a Super Bowl. Todd Downing's not winning any Super Bowls. Todd Downing has had issues last year. People were frustrated with Todd Downing's play calling last year. Justified or not, people had issues with Todd Downing's play calling last year. And if it continues, whether it's against the Bills or the Giants, it doesn't matter. People are going to be frustrated with it.
So the coordinators usually talk on Thursdays, but because the Titans are playing Monday Night Football, they everything's pushed back.
They do it on Friday.
So Jack Del Rio of the Commanders had his press conference today, and he just looked like such a hot mess up there. You know, just so disheveled, like, up there doing his press conference today. And I almost, someone tweeted out a picture where Del Rio was like, we got a good start to build our, whatever he said.
Yeah.
And I almost wanted to say, this is the look of a man who lost his spot as a head coach in the NFL because he promoted Todd Downing to offensive coordinator. That's what I was thinking when I saw it, because Del Rio looked like a mess. We're to your phone, 615-737-1025, Stillman & Company. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, those are my guys. They take outstanding care of my home, and I promise you that they can and will do the exact same for you. I love my friends at Hiller, and it is grilling and chilling season, and Hiller is celebrating all month with special deals for customers, so tackle those necessary home system replacements this month to take advantage of these special deals, like a free Yeti Tundra cooler with the purchase of a new tankless water heater, a free Traeger wood pellet grill with the purchase of a new whole home generator, and a free Yeti Tundra cooler with the purchase of a full home septic system. Hiller is also helping make sure your home is ready for colder weather, so take advantage of this limited time financing promotion on HVAC replacements, like 0% interest financing for up to 48 months on select new HVAC systems. Hiller's work is backed by the Happy You'll Be Your Services Free Guarantee, and I know this because Hiller takes great care of my home. They will do the same for you. That's Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, proud supporters of the Preds, the Vols, and Vandy. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today.
I guess the number of first down runs for Derek, I mean, a lot of people are saying too predictable, but on the other hand, is it only too predictable if you don't gain enough yardage, if they don't succeed?
That's pretty much your job and my job. That's what happens around, you know, the second guessing. I mean, we've had a lot of successful, you know, first down runs. We want to have a lot of successful first down runs and passes on Monday. And so, you know, that's the battle that everybody wages, you know, especially, you know, our focus is on Buffalo. And going up there and making sure that we have a plan that whatever we do on first down, the players understand, that they believe in, and that they have an opportunity to execute it.
There you go. That was Vrabel about the predictability. It should be noted, I'm just saying this, doesn't mean that I approve this message. I am just saying that the Titans did average 4.5 yards per rush on first down on all those first downs that they ran the ball.
Uh-huh.
What does that mean? 4.5 plus 4.5 plus 4.5 equals...
First down!
But I can't get over the third and one shotgun snap. And I can't get over the Chick Okonkwo.
The third and one sweep with
Jake.
And
I still can't get over the fact that when I look at it against 17 of 21 runs on first down, one of 21 runs for Derrick Henry on third down, that was a wildcat snap. That does bother me. But I promise phones. 615-737-1025. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. And we'll give away some John Party tickets later this segment as well. Brad is up next on Todd Downing. Thank you for calling. What's up, Brad?
Jared, Caroline, guys, love the show. Hey, big Raider fan here. Sorry, I apologize for being on Titan Radio as a Raider fan. But
that's okay. We're not Titan Radio. We're Spillman & Company Radio.
That's true. Hey, one fun fact, could have shared this with you guys a couple years ago before you hired Downing, but 2016, Bill Musgrave had the Raiders top six offense in the league. Downing took over the next year. Guess where it went? Jared, as you like to say, he crapped the bed. The Raider offense went to number 18 in the league. Next year, Downing's gone. So I'm not sure where they got their idea to hire this guy, but as a Raider fan, it didn't work out for us. Not sure why it would work out for you guys.
Let me say something. Thank you for calling, Brad. It is very clear what the position of the Las Vegas Raiders organization is on Todd Downing. Whether it's that guy, Fitz, that article we read yesterday, in which basically said that Mark Davis, it alleged this. I don't know if this is true or not. I wasn't there. But it alleges that Mark Davis fired Jack Del Rio because Jack Del Rio decided to go with Todd Downing. That Jack Del Rio, who I thought Oakland was every bit in 2016, and this is what I remember and I know, and they were every bit a Super Bowl contender when Derek Carr broke his leg against the Colts and Mark Davis was sitting up in the box and was biting on his index finger up there in the box, like, because he knew that he was screwed. Then Matt McGloin, the backup quarterback, got hurt in the last game of the year, and so they had to play Connor Cook. They lost the division. They ended up going to Houston. Brock Osweiler scored a touchdown and did the Egyptian dance after he scored it, and that was the last we ever heard of Brock Osweiler. So
he's on TV now.
Is he?
He calls games for ESPN, college football games for ESPN. I saw him on TV week one, and I thought, is that Brock Osweiler?
Brock Osweiler, that bum. So Brock Osweiler, you know, ended up beating him because Derek Carr got hurt. Then I didn't follow the Raider drama. All I remember was that it, like, took Carr a while to come back. Like, he came back, but he wasn't really healthy when he came back, and he didn't have as good of a season. They did beat the Titans in the first game of that 2017 season at Nissan Stadium, but Carr never was really all the way back, and he was an MVP-caliber player. And it's a lot like what happened to Carr that year is a lot what happened to Carson Wentz, which was he had set the bar so high, got hurt, and then he didn't really live up to the bar. Until probably last year was the first time that Carr really got back to living up to the bar. But I didn't follow it on a daily basis. We read the article yesterday from that Raider website. Or I shouldn't say Raider website. From the website the that covers site. The Raider. That's SB Nation. I mean, that's kind
of... Oh, it was SB Nation?
Yeah.
I thought it was like WeBleedSilverAndBlack.com.
Well, it was the SB Nation Raider site.
Okay.
So... The SB Nation Raider site basically said that Mark Davis fired Jack Del Rio because Jack Del Rio fired Bill Musgrave to elevate Todd Downing because other teams wanted to hire Todd Downing. And so to keep Todd Downing from leaving, they took the coordinator that was the coordinator of the offense when Derek Carr was almost a league MVP, and they replaced him with Todd Downing, and they got the Todd Downing results. And that Mark Davis, when Del Rio went to fire Downing, Mark Davis was like, don't worry about it because I'm going to fire you too. But then I always thought Mark Davis wanted to hire Gruden.
But that sounds equally like a fan-constructed narrative and also like it was probably true. If it was that bad, like if it was that bad, and I didn't pay attention to Raider football in 2016.
I didn't watch it, so I don't know.
But if it's as bad as that caller said or Fitz said or this fan site, this SB Nation said, if it was that bad, then that kind of does sound like cause for firing.
And what I know about, like, the football guy that I spend all the time with, what I know about how those guys operate is that, you know, not that he would have, if he were a general manager, would have called Fitz, but he would have called somebody that he knew mm-hmm. that was like, oh, yeah, he was the safety coach on the Oilers when in 1997 when Floyd was the general manager. And so Floyd's thinking about hiring this guy on the staff. So he's going to pick up the phone and call his guy who was with the Raiders when mm-hmm. Downing was there and say, hey, what did you think of Todd when he was the coordinator? And if he, you know, if he hears the, oh, God, no, then he would not hire that guy. I don't know if Vrabel does that. I think Vrabel, like, once you're in the Vrabel circle of trust, what everybody outside of the Vrabel circle of trust thinks doesn't matter. And what he thinks does matter.
That probably sounds about right. But he was brought in as tight ends coach, no? What
yes.
year, 2018?
Yes. So Matt LaFleur goes to Green Bay.
Uh-huh.
Matt LaFleur wants to take Arthur Smith, the tight ends coach, with him to Green Bay to be the offensive coordinator. Vrabel gives Arthur Smith the offensive coordinator job to keep Arthur Smith from going to Green Bay with Matt LaFleur.
So was Downing brought in to yes. be the tight end? So don't you think Vrabel would have done his due diligence on Downing when he brought him in as the tight ends coach?
And so that was something that I found somewhat odd, was Vrabel was asked a question during training camp about Tim Kelly, because Tim Kelly spent a lot of time with the tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Luke Steckel is the tight ends coach, and I think Luke Steckel's a pretty good coach.
Yeah.
And so Kelly spends all this time with the tight ends, and they asked Vrabel why he spends time with the tight ends. And he was like, well, you know, that's just kind of how we've done it. Matt had Arthur. Arthur had Todd. Now Todd's got Tim or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? Matt had Arthur. Was Arthur more than the tight ends coach? Arthur was only the tight ends coach because Mike Mularkey was the tight ends coach. Ken Wisenhunt got fired. Mike Mularkey got elevated to interim head coach. Arthur Smith was the assistant tight ends coach. And then Arthur Smith became the tight ends coach.
And that's interesting because Matt had Arthur. Well, Arthur was a coach.
Right.
Tim Kelly's not a coach.
Nobody considered Arthur. Like, on the outside.
Yeah.
You know, the inside. Everybody that's worked with Arthur Smith loves Arthur Smith. Mike Mularkey would swear on a stack of Bibles for Arthur Smith. And I think Vrabel would too, and I think, you know, everybody. It's like, I feel bad for Arthur for some of these things that are going to happen to him in Atlanta, because I think Arthur's a pretty good coach. But
they've just got no players.
The problem is that when Arthur was the tight ends coach, nobody knew that Arthur was some kind of special coach. Like, nobody on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
The inside, they probably knew. But nobody on the outside knew.
But isn't that kind of how that works? If you're a positional coach?
Yes and no. Like, when Downing was on the staff as the tight ends coach, and everybody knew that Arthur Smith was going to get a job because he got interviewed by all these teams, it was like, where do they go from here? And everybody was like, well, Downing called plays in Oakland, so that would be the natural progression that he would go call them here. I don't know, man.
I don't. That sounds interesting to me, because it was Arthur Smith the brains behind Matt LaFleur? And is that what Tim Kelly is for Todd Downing?
I keep going back to that.
I don't know.
That comment from Vrabel.
Is it just like a little buddy, like your little go-to, your right-hand man, your go-to guy? I need some help. I need another offensive brain. You're the one that I go to. Little sidekick.
The other thing, though, is that there's no doubt Arthur was a superstar coach, because, one, Dave McGinnis told me that when he was on Mike Munchak's staff, that Arthur was like an intern, and that when Arthur would put things together for the coaches, it was like, man, that Arthur, that was everything he did was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the fact that Matt LaFleur took the Green Bay job, and I don't think there's a single coach on that Green Bay coaching staff on offense that came from here.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, like, Keith Carter.
Turbo.
That was LaFleur's guy. He was like the assistant running backs coach in Atlanta, where LaFleur was, or LaFleur was the assistant running backs coach and Carter was the assistant line coach, and LaFleur brought him here, and LaFleur didn't take him to Green Bay. But the one guy that he wanted to take to Green Bay was Arthur, and he wanted to take him to be offensive coordinator. So it was clear that they knew that Arthur was a superstar.
Right.
Did Vrabel bring in Todd Downing to be the replacement for Arthur Smith, knowing that he would eventually land a coaching job? That's hard, though, because nobody knew of Arthur Smith outside until the Titans started winning in 2019. I don't know.
But it's not like they brought in Tim Kelly to eventually be the offensive coordinator, or did they?
So this is the other wrench into the revisionist history about Vrabel and the coordinator position, is that I forget who reported this. When Arthur Smith went to Atlanta, the Titans requested permission from the Texans to interview Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly was Bill O'Brien's offensive coordinator. Bill O'Brien got fired 4 games into the 2020 season. Tim Kelly took over the offense. That was O'Brien's offense in Houston, and Tim Kelly took it over when Bill O'Brien got fired.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went out and hired David Culley, who had nothing to do with the Texans, and the Titans requested permission to interview Tim Kelly, and the Texans said no, and they held on to Tim Kelly. Then they elevate Lovie Smith, they fire Tim Kelly, and the Titans immediately go and hire him. So if they were requesting permission to interview Tim Kelly, then that would tell me that Vrabel's first choice probably was Tim Kelly, just like his first choice when they hired Matt LaFleur was Ryan Day. So this is quite the rabbit hole we've now gone down.
I am, my brain hurts.
No, the only reason Ryan Day was not the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, or maybe he was co-offensive coordinator,
mm-hmm.
but I believe that Tom Wilson, the old coach from Indiana, was the play caller for Ohio State.
Right.
Vrabel tried to hire Ryan Day, and Urban Meyer turned around and made Ryan Day the play caller and the coach in waiting in order to keep him from coming here.
That's what you do for good coaches.
They're crazy, though.
That is nuts.
615-737-1025. I did promise phones, and I'm not sure we really got to a lot of phones there.
No, I don't think we did. I think we just went down a rabbit hole.
We have a lot of phones, don't we?
We have so many phones.
Do you think what people just listened to that they tuned out?
I hope not.
Like, Ian, do you think...
I think that was interesting.
Do you think that that was good radio, or was that just two people going down like conspiracy theories from 3 years ago?
Which could also be good radio.
That's fair.
Well, I mean, if you are tuned into the ins and outs of the coaching staff and how the hiring went down, I think you probably could follow that for sure.
TD says Arthur Smith did presentations to the team even when he was tight ends coach, and he had a much bigger role than tight ends coach, which tracks.
Makes sense.
Tracks.
Yeah. Did Downing when he was tight ends coach?
I don't know. I don't know. 615-737-1025 Stillman and Company. We'll try to get some phones. But I do have a PSA for everybody that has to get out there. We'll do that next. And we'll give away some tickets. That's right. Who wants to go see John Party? Well, I've got your opportunity to do just that. Be caller 5 right now, and you'll be seeing John Party at Ascend Amphitheater on Saturday, October 15th. Caller 5 at 615-737-1025. Good luck. Get excited. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And let me tell everybody out there, don't miss the pregame show this Monday night live from the Twin Peaks in Cool Springs. Join me, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason from 3:45 to 5:45 prior to the Titans and the Bills. The pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey, and Superbook Sports, and Ounce of Hope Cannabis Company. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company, I did promise some phones. Maybe we'll get to them. But the one thing that I do have to discuss, Thursday night football starts tonight. It's a good one. The Chargers at the Chiefs. This is the NFL giving Amazon a little pat on the buttocks of, hey, you know, some of these Thursday night games aren't going to be great, but you're paying $1 trillion for this package, so we're giving you this game. We want two high-end quarterbacks, a good game, and there's going to be a lot of people around the country that do not know how to find this game.
That's probably true, yes.
So here's my advice for every guy right now driving home, waiting for Thursday night football, or just because, like, I think a lot of people that don't do what we do for a living almost kind of passively watch Thursday and Monday night football. It's like if they have something better to do, they'll do that. But normally they don't because it's Monday night and Thursday night.
And I think we care about certain things that a whole heck of a lot of just normal people.
Turn on the game. Like my dad watches like one Monday night football game a month, and then he'll turn it off if he gets bored he's not like sit glued to the TV like, oh, the Broncos and the Seahawks. But there's also going to be a lot of people that are like, wow, this is a really fun game, I want to tune in. And they're not going to know what to do. So let me just say this. Number one, if you don't have Amazon, ask your wife. She probably does. Reminds me of a story one time when we had to get reimbursed for something and Floyd brought his whole credit card bill in and Ryan looked up at the desk and said, Floyd, you're subscribed to Netflix? And Floyd shrugged like, I don't know.
I guess.
I don't know. Yeah. Number two.
His credit card bill. That's so sweet.
The whole bill.
That's so sweet.
Number two. If you do not have Amazon and your wife does not have Amazon, or you do not have a wife.
She has Amazon.
Call your kids. They probably have Amazon. If you do not have a wife or kids that have Amazon, call somebody else. Because surely one out of every 8 people has Amazon. When you open the Amazon app on your television, if you've got a young enough TV, it will come right up. It will be big right at the front. It will have the game, and you can click the game. And it will just be right there, Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, and it will feel like you're watching on TV, but it will be a little delayed because it is streaming.
If you have a smart TV.
If you don't have a smart TV, you have to have one of these Amazon Fire Sticks or a Roku device or anything that makes your TV. It's a USB.
Apple TV.
It's like either a USB or an HDMI. And it plugs right into the TV, and it gives you, you know, you can watch it. The last and final thought that I have, and I probably should have checked with all of our wonderful sports bars that are advertisers of this program that we are so thankful for, but I did not. I don't know if sports bars are going to have this game for sure.
It's not a gimme, no, because the sports bars would have to have smart TVs too, and why would sports bars have smart TVs?
No, they all have DirecTV,
they just have regular
so they can
cable.
Have Sunday Ticket.
Right, exactly.
But I do think sports bars should have smart TVs. For like, if I owned a sports bar, I would get a smart TV in order to put in the sports bar, because when you've got DirecTV satellite dish for Sunday Ticket, which I get why people do that. One, Sunday Ticket's going away from DirecTV, but two, when it rains, there is not a worse feeling than being in a sports bar watching a game when it rains. And then
it's packed and you can't watch the TV.
And so you want to like pop over like the YouTube TV.
But also, like, it is 2022. Like, are we still dealing with satellite dishes?
Well, in order to get Sunday Ticket.
I know, but like, I just can't believe that we are in this day and age where we have self-driving cars and rain wipes out televisions. But I digress.
That, I mean, look, my dad will be, my dad's 71 years old. He's got Amazon. He'll be able to watch the game. Will he watch the game? I don't know. But he'll be able to watch the game. But I am worried about a lot of you out there, and I can't, I know I probably talk about Floyd too much, but I can't help but think about what the hell would Floyd Reese do if he had to watch Thursday Night Football tonight? Ian, how worried would you be for the old man tonight?
Oh, he'd be calling up a son, for sure.
Oh, he'd Sean be blowing be on the phone. Sean up.
Sean would be on the phone, yes.
I mean, we would probably have, like, lectured him before the show about how to do this, and he still, you know, but he wouldn't miss kickoff now. That's it for us. We're out of here. Stillman and Company, we'll see you tomorrow right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.